we've had a variety of programs, and we keep trying to see what we might do. It's one of the main emphases in the churches these days. Wheat is a national program, and there's Food for the World, Bread for the World, all kinds of programs. So we've taken advantage of the fact that Floyd Collins is here. He's been a professor of agriculture?
In the School of Agriculture 3 years and 30 years in the U.S. Regional Soybean Laboratory as a soybean specialist. And then I didn't stick to soybeans. I worked on any crop I could get a hold of.
So we have what you might call a real specialist. And so we're just going to pick his brains today. And he's going to present some things, and then you're going to have a chance to ask some questions. If he doesn't tell you the truth, I'll catch him up.
And I hope that if I stray from the truth, that all of you will catch me up. If you're here to hear a pessimistic view of the world food supply, you're in the wrong place. I don't have any such feeling. And I want to tell you why I have this feeling. I attended I read about the World Food Conference and attended the United States Conference on Increasing the World Food Supply and How We Might Go About It. It was held in Kansas City last August, in which they had a lot of experts and a few of us that got in. I don't know how we got there, but we got there anyway. Yeah. Not necessarily have to be an expert, but I went as a substitute delegate for one of the men in Illinois that couldn't make it. And he called me at Wichita from Illinois to go. This conference took up the 16 categories of energy conservation, which is quite short, and land resources, water resources, air, pollution of the air, animal resources, beef, hogs, sheep, goats, and fish and poultry, cereal crops, wheat, oats, rye, barley, rice, corn, millets and sorghums, and grains and forages and pastures, legumes, including soybeans, peanuts, lentils, peas, and garden beans, and then the preservation in the ways of drying and canning and processing and storage of foods. Control of insects and control of diseases of plants and things of this nature. Weed control and poisonous plant control and world. And how do we go about selling the foods that we have? And the world economics and world trade economics and distribution and financing and marketing. And the another category, fruit and nuts. And in this we had bees and honey. And bees are absolutely necessary to the apples and peaches and fruit crops because this is pollinization of the fruits. And if they don't have bees, we don't have that. And one of the main topics of discussion was the improvement of our commercial crops in the storing of food, photosynthesis. For example, how can we possibly improve, and all plants are dependent on the sun, because for the sun for power, and this is God's given free gift to mankind, as well as the air and the water. God gives us about 89% and we add about 11% to the production of corn. And we have one of our commercial crops, we have the tremendous possibility of improving what they give back to us in food. Because it sounds almost unbelievable that the corn plant gives you back in corn grain in food only about 45 to 46 hundredths of 1% of what you feed it to give you. This is tremendously inefficient. It is one of the things that nature created. God created corn and placed it here. Also corn and wheat and oats and rye and barley. All of our crops have been improved by man, by selection, and all of these things. But God made them first, and he made them in the wild, and they had to be made so they would survive. The corn plant that I wish to talk about, this corn that makes itself 0.0046%, is extremely inefficient, yet it is one of the highest yielding of the crops that we grow. We can get more corn per acre, as much corn per acre probably in food value, as any of our crops. Yet corn comes up here and sets a flower, and one flower, and this flower, as soon as it is fertilized, sends an auxin into the plant, which proceeds to kill the other flowers of that corn plant. There are, on normal corn that you will grow, there are 6 flowers, and 2 at the most usually develop. Yet the corn shuts off and kills the other 4 usually the other 5, and you get only 1 ear of corn from a stalk of corn. Now if we could do this, shut this and grow as corn is entirely capable, it's been done in the greenhouse by Lambert and others, and Widholm have done this, they have succeeded in getting 6 ears of corn from a single corn plant, and it takes very little more water and scarcely any more energy to produce those 6 ears than it does to produce 1. Well, what does the corn plant do with the energy that's fed to it? As soon as it gets started on one ear, kills the others, then it loafs and wastes the stuff. The wastes are tremendous. Yet, it is the corn plant's way of protecting itself so that it will produce some seed, so that it will survive if it were out in the wild. Now, this is a wild characteristic that is carried through into the commercial. The same is true with apples, the apple drop, especially this is true in soybeans. When soybeans get under stress, they drop pods like mad. They may have put on 700 or 800 pods, and you come down to 50 or 60 when they get through. And if they're under stress any part of the season, they abort the seed. So abortion in nature is a very common practice. The corn plant kills the other flowers, shuts them off. Soybean drops the seed, apples drop, all of these things. Now what we need to do is to have some of you young people and some of your children get busy and find out how to have corn quit loafing after it gets its crop started. And I am of the opinion we're going to do that, because some of the people that I have worked with have successfully done this in greenhouse conditions, under controlled conditions. They were not successful in the field last year, and I haven't had the chance to talk to these men to see whether they were successful in the field the past year, or this season. Corn probably is setting. Now, but these men are doing these things. We also have some young men, and this is where it's going to come from. The young people with new ideas. I had a young man working with me and working with the corn people, and this man Bob Gray wanted to know, what did God make corn out of? They cross. What plants did he cross? Now they know one parent of corn is in the wild corn that grows around the cornfields in Mexico and in Central America. But they don't know yet what the other one is of the corn plant. So he's trying to go back and find out the plant and start over and make the cross and see whether or not he can, not necessarily he can improve on what God has created for us, but he can use his hands to assist in the creation of more food for the world. This can be done on a great many crops. This is entirely possible. None of our crops are as efficient as 1%, and you wouldn't loan your money to anybody if he only paid you 1%, would you? You want more efficiency than this. So we can make the great improvement, and it could come within 10 years, it could come within 5, but it will come. I feel sure of it, that we will increase the efficiency. Photosynthesis in the corn plant, in the wheat plant, in the rye, in the oats, in the barley, in the rice. We can also, I think, improve the quality of the protein. And we can improve the quality or food quality of corn by high lysine corn. Mertz at Purdue discovered it in Illinois, had many, many strains of high lysine corn, but they were working on these hard yellow dents and so on, which is a very flinty, hard type of corn, and this high lysine corn was soft, rather soft, and grew. And this type of corn, when Mertz and his co-workers discovered it, found that it would prevent or even cure the people that were fed as babies and children with kwashiorkor, this disease where they have that is so common in the tropics. Feed them this and they recover completely, this type of corn, and improved protein quality. Now we have high lysine sorghum and high lysine wheat and high lysine. We're working on high lysine everything that we can think of. And it's entirely possible. We can improve the quality and reduce the diseases. We can improve the ranges and forage and pastures. We can improve the soybeans. We can improve peanuts. It was my pleasure to get to work with the man from Oklahoma who was breeding peanuts. Brought in 6 wild peanuts from South America, collected in South America. These peanuts were no larger, these wild peanuts were no larger than a grain of wheat. Very, very small things. They are peanuts. And he wants to use these to cross with the commercial peanut and pick up the resistance to disease, the resistance to insect damage, and these things to go with it. He hopes by this technique to get away from some of the peanut wilts and things of this nature. The young men, the children, these people that will go out and do this type of work. And he gave me enough peanuts, so I tasted to see what wild peanuts tasted like. And they are fully as effective in drawing up your mouth as a green persimmon. Now, we don't want any of this in the food, but we do want this quality. We want these things to be disease resistant, and we want them to be incorporated into commercial strains. I happen to work with another man who worked with corn, Mike Blua. Mike has some unusual corn. He has corn that has a stalk up here and the leaves all come out on one side. You ever hear of any monosomic corn? One-sided corn? Then the normal corn has a leaf over here and a leaf over here and all going up the stalk, and we come on up the stalk and we have 6 ears at the base of each one of these leaves down here. But Mike has a trisomic corn, and the trisomic corn is at 120 degrees here and 120 degrees here. And Mike successfully got one that was, has six leaves coming out. I don't know where he's going, but he's having a wonderful time. And he has the possibility on his sixth one, he told me he thought that he had evidences of 9 years, a 9-year possibility. It's this type of research that encourages you. The improved photosynthesis will come. This is entirely possible. If you only have 1% or less to go to something better, just any kind of improvement. And we can have as much as 4%. It's neglected to mention that most of our weeds are far more efficient than any of our commercial plants. Most weeds are entirely capable of taking care of themselves. And you can water, see what we call weeds. What are the possibilities? Now, we have many people who think that the Green Revolution, this improved varieties where we have used hybrid corn, is going to solve the problems of the world. We're going to have the high lysine corn. We're going to do this. We're going to use hybrids and so on. We have Borlaug went down to Mexico and got the dwarf wheats that we could give fertilizer, and they wouldn't lay down like they were tired. They'd stand up and produce and increase the yields of wheat. Well, the Green Revolution is not suited to India, China, Africa, or the nations which have these small crop areas. You simply haven't got the fertilizer. You have to pour the fertilizer to. And you have to, if you're using this, these plants that are hybrids, you have to go through a seed production every year. They do not reproduce themselves. And this is not a satisfactory solution to the people in these underprivileged nations. And they simply don't have the fertilizers, and they don't have the insecticides, and the Green Revolution is not the answer to the world's food problem. We will need to improve, and new ideas is what we need. And I want you to encourage your children to use all the imagination they have and get them into plant breeding and physiology and botany and biology, all of these fields of science, and let them go. Encourage them and follow, let them, our imagination go. Some one of your children will do the thing that must be done. The fact that they are working on it now doesn't mean there isn't room for all of your children. God knows how to feed and clothe his children, and he needs your hands. Every one of you, in the encouragement of every one of you. And with this, I think we can feed twice or three times the population we have, and we'll probably do it much easier. I'm not a bit pessimistic. I have faith in God and his children to work things out. God's creations. We need to have improved plants. We now grow one stalk of corn and plant 22,000-23,000 per acre and hope to get 1 ear from each stalk. We would like to have 1 ear produced or 6 ears produced on a stalk, and this ear become dry and the stalk stay with green leaves and a green stem. So then after we had gone through and harvested the corn and thrashed it with our combine, we could use the green material as fodder for animals. Now, corn doesn't behave that way now, but it can be made to behave that way. We can improve wheat, oats, cottonseed, sorghum, grain sorghum, potatoes, beans, fruits, berries, hays, and forages. And there isn't any need to be pessimistic. God still runs this world, and God's in charge. That's the way I believe it. And when I'm working in science, if I am following what God approves of, things work. And when we're trying to do something that's not supposed to work, and God's trying to tell us that it won't work, we don't get anywhere. We can make a cross and it won't produce any seed, it won't come back, and so on. If it God approves what you're doing, and I quote John Lennon on this, he said, we got to have God on our side or we just don't get anywhere. God has the hands that God has as your hands and my hands, and this is where we will work. We are not capable of creating anything. We are capable of using what God gives us to work with and to successfully increase the food for mankind. And we have a tremendous bunch of crops. We have, in the legume family, we have soybeans, peas, and lentils, and beans, and alfalfa, and clovers. And we have a crop in the clovers that has a nodule that grows on the roots that's capable of taking nitrogen from the air and combining with an oxygen and making nitrates as a fertilizer, and the plant, the legumes, gather their own, a great deal of their own nitrogen. And this nitrogen is the portion of you that's protein. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have the other crops also doing this? Sprague, who's in Iowa, is doing such work. He's trying to make corn and wheat and oats and so on, the grasses, collect their own nitrogen from the air. And it, nature can take nitrogen from the air and collect and join it with oxygen and make the nitrate fertilizer for our plants, and it doesn't have to have high pressures and high temperatures. We need to discover how to do that. If I knew how to do it, I would have done it. One of your children probably will get this done. Maybe you'll do it. I hope so. If we can get these things to work, fine. If we can't do it, then we have, within the past 3 or 4 years, found out how to make plants that you have never seen before. Crosses can be made. We have, John Lennon said he has oats crossed with wheat, and wheat crossed with barley, and barley crossed with wheat, and I've forgotten how many different crosses he has. He's successfully making things happen that couldn't. The books say you can do it. The books say it. It's unfortunate that many of the things that we have got into our books just simply weren't entirely true. God made a cross. He crossed wheat and rye and made triticale. Tritium for wheat and cicale is... Am I right here? I'm not a botanist. There's somebody here that's a botanist. Am I right? Cicale is this rye. I guess I'm talking to... if Barbara was here, she could... Larry, can you help me out? Well, triticale is... the triticale is a cross which God made, which resembles wheat and has the hardiness of rye. A stiffer straw, the bigger grain, and an increased yield over wheat. With this start, when you find out how to do it, and you've got to know a great deal more than And you've got to know how. You've got to know your botany and your physiology and your biology and all of these things. You're going to have to educate yourself. And then we can take this triticale that God made the first one, and now we have made all of these others. And John Longan says that he has made a cross between soybean and corn. Doesn't produce any seed. God didn't want that one. It has to have possibilities. Something that God might do in nature. You use your hands to help. God has no other hands than yours and mine. Charlie Brim works on hybrid soybeans. Hanway out in Nebraska is working on leaf feeding. He feeds fish meal and auger by airplane spray onto a soybean field and increases the yield by as much as 20 to 25 bushels per acre. He has to spray it three times to do this, but it doesn't cost very much to spray it. Henry Hadley has Henry Hadley and Dick Bernard has about 3,500 collected strains of wild soybeans, and they're going through this selection. It was my pleasure when I was with them to look at the chemical composition of practically all of this selection. They're going through it now, making crosses to see can we improve our soybean crop. So when we, and Ann Stemmler and Bob DeWitt have about 12,000 sorghum, grain sorghum samples together collected, and they're going through it trying to give us a better grain sorghum. One of these, what we call Milo, many people call Milo, or kaffir corn, or sorghum, or a grain, producing grain. Walt Faradawa is making, again, wide crosses and attempting to create a perennial soybean, one that you go out and plant and it comes up and produces a soybean crop and you don't have to plant it again. You don't use your energy, and it's supposed to come up the next year and do this. These things are possible. We have to get behind these young people. Bob Bequette Wilson at DeKalb Commercial Breeders have hybrid wheat. Now, hybrid wheats are higher in protein, better quality protein than the regular wheats, but they have to plant. They plant 29 female rows and one male row, and they get down the line here, male wheat fertilizes this and you produce the hybrid wheat variety. But the distance for this to spread out is so wide that you, out in the center here, in between, you start getting a failure to have fertilized wheat. Normal wheat flower doesn't open, self-fertilized. Heimowitz has found that soybeans contain a substance which is rather poisonous. It's a trypsin inhibitor, and if you feed raw soybeans that you may grind and feed it to your chickens, it reduces egg production greatly. He's looking for a soybean that does not contain the trypsin inhibitor. Now, the processed soybeans, you have to be cooked and run through the mill, because you can't use them without baking them or cooking them some way, or they are not good feed. We want to improve it so the people in foreign lands can use the soybean without the cooking. Bonnet and Brown, working on oats, discovered that some of the wild oats, and by the way, I'm not talking about the kind of wild oats that most people think of when I say wild oats. I'm talking about the wild strains of oats that grow are much higher in protein than the oats plant, the oats. that we have commercially. And the oats that they have found growing wild has very high protein. It's about 32% protein. And the commercial oats that we have are about 17 or 18. They cross between the wild oats, produces an in-between protein, much improved protein in the oats plant. The oil content or fat content of the oats used to be 2 or 3% of fat, and we have some strains now that run as high as 11%. We increase the energy stored in oats by doing these things. Improved food value in oats, improved food value in all of our crops is entirely possible. And I told you that Ernest Sprague was working on trying to get nitrogen to a nitrogen strain that would produce nitrogen so we could put add it to the corn plant and so on. What can you do and what can I do? You can encourage the young people to enter research, plant breeding, become biologists, physiologists, cytologists, be botanists or bacteriologists, work with foods, and study physics and chemistry, and be general specialists. And I don't know of anybody that needs a crash program. They need to have steady support at the universities for the grad students and for the students and for the department so they can do this research. But if you were to give them $1 billion and say, we give you an unlimited amount of funds, make this happen quick. I don't know anybody in the plant breeding world or anywhere else who has the brains right now to make this happen quick. But you can be as sure as you're sitting here that it's going to happen, because we've got some young people with some ideas and some professors that are backing them up, saying, encouraging them so that they can go ahead and do these things. And with that view, I would like to turn this thing over for questions and comments from you.
Who do you mean by we? I'm not quite clear on that.
We, all of us.
The world, the entire world, you mean?
The world, yes. Because we are not the only scientists that are working on this problem.
And possibly what you were talking about, educating our young people, that would maybe pertain even more to third world nations and such nations that we have so much to discover as to just how to grow a bit of food there.
Yes.
I just want to be sure, because so often we think of only the United States and a small portion.
That is a very small portion, yes. Fay and I got to go to Africa with the International Institute of Tropical Agriculture and the group of scientists that are there. There are there's one in South America similar to the one in Africa for African crops, and there's one in South American crops in Venezuela, and there's one in Peru for potatoes, there's one on rice in the Philippines, and there are a number of more that are scattered around. And they bring in scientists from all over the world to assist with this. And I didn't mention the fact that instrumentation has been improved greatly. Fay and I got to go to Africa because I helped develop at the University of Illinois a nuclear magnetic resonance machine which will analyze the oil content or fat content of a living seed without destruction. You could pick the seed that you wanted to plant without, and take it out and plant it. You can run a single grain of corn or a cupful of corn, a single soybean or a cupful of soybeans, or a single grain of wheat, a single grain of rice, or this. And you can have the composition of this material and know what you're planting. That is the thing that I went to Africa to help the African in Nigeria set up one of these machines. And while I got there, I found a laboratory with a lot of other good equipment and nobody knew how to run it. So I spent 2 months training operators doing to run this for the benefit of the agriculture in Africa?
The way my colleague, who's professor of agriculture at the University of Chicago, puts it, in, and I have here his analysis of the whole world food situation, says if the industrial nations among them were to commit themselves to provide $1 billion annually for a decade and half that amount for the subsequent decade, great strides could be made to bring the benefits of agriculture research to all the major climatic zones for the developing world. Additional scientists need to be trained, but one who is familiar with academic life in the United States knows that the facilities for such training are readily available, so that he sees necessity for national research centers, since the problems are somewhat different. And since they need to have people who are familiar with the developing situation, who are aware of what happens to the kinds of grains that are developed here when they're taken into another climate, because you frequently have problems of disease and insects and so forth that different climatic conditions bring about. So that
you're entirely just, right, Al.
Just yes. The thing you were talking about
right.
In Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that we are not committing that kind of money. And what Floyd is talking about is what is needed, but the commitment of money is what is needed. Now, one of the agencies that's really concerned with it, our national policy, and it's really concerned with legislation, is Bread for the World. That is, it's a national lobby group, really, that's trying to get our national policy, since unless we get a change at the level of research and development and also of trade. Another important thing would be freeing trade in the world so that these other nations would have the resources. They could sell some of their goods and have the resources to develop their agriculture. His whole philosophy, I think it's probably someone like yours, Floyd, is these nations have got to develop their own agriculture.
That's right. We cannot feed the world. We couldn't feed him for 1 month if we wanted to and turned all of our resources to it. We simply couldn't do it. It's got to be done by training these people in these nations to help themselves. And by the way, they have been doing it for a long time, and you better know that what you take in here works, because some of the things that we take in are fanciest kind of things don't work good at all. Their native product has been through the mill, and it works for them, and they aren't about to change on some of these. You've got to go in there and demonstrate, and you will do more good if you can send a Peace Corps man or somebody in. Finance a young man or a young woman or a young couple, and then back them, and you let them go in here and do their missionary work. And this missionary, if you can put food in their stomachs and keep them happy, then you can do that for them that should be done.
Or train some of them.
Train some of them. While you're there, train some
and
of them.
Guarantee in some way a continuing program.
Yeah. I think Joseph, back here, Josephine Donnell said that if you give me a fish, I'll eat today, but if you teach me to fish, I'll eat for life. That's what monks do.
I've been reading a little on here and there where about the notion of the changing of our climate, you know, probably all of that. And the notion is that we have gone through a very warm period on Earth from the turn of the century to 1940s, early 1940s. And from that time on, there has been a cooling which is possibly or is believed to be more normal, which will cut in to the production of food as our population rises. And they give us an example that Canada, the northern Canadian wheat crops have areas have a shortened growing season by 2 weeks since 1940. I was curious if there was more information along that line that you would have. That's something we have no control over in a cooler world. Could that somehow limit the United States production of food?
Indeed
much
it could.
Like in Russia or something.
Indeed it could, and it probably may do this. But while it may be limited here, if we can improve the photosynthetic capabilities and make these commercial crop plants quit loafing after they get some seed started, it wouldn't matter too much if we...
Yeah, I don't know anybody who can predict what's going to happen, because you get such varying... I've been reading a little about this in regard to energy, and the thesis is that we're heating up the world because of the amount of energy we're using and the waste energy. And we're also developing a carbon dioxide layer that somehow retains the energy. But the fact is, things have been getting colder, so the energy kind of pessimists say, well, we're going to, you know, heat up the world and melt the ice caps, and New York City is going to go into the Atlantic Ocean. And the fact is, things are cooling off. So, and the long-term trend seems to be hotter, but we've got a short-term, intermediate trend, at least according to, and you don't know whom to believe in terms of this stuff. So I don't think we can really project much. I'd rather take the point of view that Floyd represents, namely that we need to do what we can to improve production.
I see the idea that technology is going to play probably the major factor, but I see so many other factors that are involved. You started to bring out some, just the people themselves, their background, the notion that what they raise per year is all they can raise, and that means starvation or not. They'll do that with a hoe, and they're not about to take on some new method until it's proven to them very well that they're not going to starve if that fails. Because if they try it 1 year, they try it one year and it doesn't work, they starve. And there's a lot of course, other things too in the third world nations that have to be overcome. Is there any organizations that are working in this way? I don't mean just teaching how to raise plants, but organizations that are working within the countries by the country's government auspices or something like that to help people to overcome the mental block to this type of change. And we need it to get enough food to eat.
Well, the international groups are doing it, yes, a considerable amount of it. And in Africa, they don't need big tractors. They might use a little garden tractor that stirs the soil like this, and then they'd have to have fuel for it, but you're far better off to give them a real good hoe and a shovel.
How can you beat that? Several thousand year old hole they got, it's just the right angle.
You can't beat it too much, except that if you wanted to give them a few extra holes that they couldn't possibly buy, they might raise more food for their family. Mm-hmm. I don't know about a lot of this either, but I'm not a pessimist in any sense of the word.
And the fact is, there are long-term programs and short-term programs.
Yes, indeed.
And what you're talking about is the long-term program, which is going to produce increased crops, which crops can be grown in various nations under the conditions of their climate. And there are some short-term programs, I think, too, that is, there are some people who are just starving. And there are also periods of drought and real crop failures where the world is dependent upon some of us for filling in. And I personally, while I realize that our giving to crop or to wheat or to these agencies that are providing food right now, that isn't going to solve the problem in the long term. I can't see any other alternative but to try to provide some immediate help. And
well, you're teaching them to fish, huh?
Big part.
Right, you're teaching them to fish.
Now, some people think that's my mentor here, in a way, with whom I disagree on a lot of things. Sat across from him in church for 17 years, thinks that the real issue is providing research and freeing up trade. as we simply have to provide. We have tariffs against their products, agricultural products, fruits and things, sugar, for example, some of the things that our third world nations develop, and their industrial products. And if we don't free them up, they won't have the capacity, the economic capacity, to develop themselves, develop their whole economic way of life. And I think that's very important in Mankind at the Turning Point, which is in the library here, and I think there's some copies in the bookstore. The point is over and over again made, and I don't know how true it is, but a group of scientists, scholars of all kinds got together and collaborated, the Club of Rome report, said that the economic development was equally important with the agricultural development. If you didn't get the economic development so they could import the fertilizers or get the fertilizers or build the machines that they need in terms of their style, which would be not our big tractors, but what was relevant for their, if they couldn't develop this, if they couldn't get the support for changes in agriculture, the economic support, it wouldn't work. That in the long run, developing their agriculture would produce more starvation almost than if they had a kind of combined agricultural and industrial development at the same time. That's the thesis.
Encourage them a surplus as an incentive then so that they can buy.
To provide the support, you have to have transportation, you have to have all kinds of things that fit in with the developing agriculture.
Hey?
Well, you mentioned to me, you know,
I would discuss that just a moment. The African people in general are not able to handle lactose sugar in dried milk, and it gives them tremendous gastric troubles. Hence the milk sent over for the Biafrians when they were starving to death over here. Somebody had a lot of powdered milk sent over, and you couldn't give it to them. They couldn't eat it even when they were starving. So there are people in the world that simply can't handle some of our foods, and we want to give it to them. And if you put it on the dock and don't send somebody over to distribute in trucks and things like this, and they haven't got a group and organization in here, you're just fooling yourself anyway. They aren't going to give it.
Much of the food that is now produced does not reach human stomachs because of distribution problems.
You're so right.
How is that going to be solved? Answer
to that, I think, is that if they grow their own, they know where it is. And this is probably the best answer, is to train them to do their own, grow their own. I don't see that we're going to have a distribution system that doesn't make a profit for the person who sends the food over there. And you don't have to have a profit if you're starving to death. You just want to get some food to eat. And this is why it must be done by the people that are there. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Distribution is a problem here, yes. We'll send it to the nations that can pay for it, because you can't penalize the Washington farmer for raising apples and wheat and stuff like this and limiting the price of a loaf of bread where he can't afford to grow.
It's a very complex international economic issue, however, in terms of supply and demand, and I'm reflecting this paper again to a certain extent, that if the supply of food really exceeds the demand, the price is going down, and then it's going to create all kinds of problems. On the other hand, if the supply is much lower than the demand, the price is going up worldwide, and if the supply is lower than demand, then there is a point to our reduction of our eating habits, or change in our eating habits, such that we don't use so much grain. And you can then eat lower on the protein chain, and you provide food. And my mentor thinks that the supply of food is going to grow at about 2.8% or 3%, which is going to be a little more than the population. So there's really going to be a demand for it. But it's going to kind of keep up with the supply or with the demand, and therefore there isn't much point in the reduction of our standard of living or of our way of eating. I don't know whether it's a reduction of our standard of living. We still get the proteins. And again, I'm in some ways I'm a sentimentalist, I guess. In another way, I don't know whether he's right or not. So I prefer, at least that's where I am today. Tomorrow I may be somewhere else. That we really think seriously about what we eat. And if you eat beef, as we will tonight, where it takes 20 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of beef, and what was it we had last night, was it? We had spinach a quiche in which there was no meat. I mean, and the kitchen here are very aware of the issues and are really thinking about how you become responsible. And I'm not trying to make this simple or too sentimental, but it seems to me that that we have to think seriously about our own eating habits in terms of the present amount of grain. Now, if everything that Floyd says comes true, then we won't need to think about this. But I think you have to think about it every year. I think you just have to make an assessment of where we are and whether there just is a need for more grain than is available in this country, and whether it will be bought, whether it will be distributed, and decided.
As our natural resources, as fuel and fertilizer grow short, how are we going to do it?
You mean you could...
If we're running out of fuel to power tractors and airplanes and grain crops and such...
We can grow fuel on an acre of ground and use the food that we grow to convert it to fuel. This can be done, but we have had cheap fossil fuels where it was not practical. We can make a very, very good grade of gasoline out of soybean oil. We can make a very good gasoline out of coal. We can make it out of wood chips, and we can do these things. It has to be a cheap product.